This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this U.S. politics edition of the program, U.S. President Donald J. Trump and Democratic nominee, former Vice President Joe Biden, faced off in their final presidential debate before the November 3rd election, which will also determine the makeup of Congress, both the upper and lower chambers, the Senate and House of Representatives. What effect will the debate have on the trajectory of the race? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. While November 3rd looms large as official election day, more than 47 million eligible voters have already cast their ballots by mail or in-person early voting, prompted by concerns over the coronavirus pandemic. In addition to the presidency, all 435 congressional seats are in play, as well as one-third of the Senate. Most election pundits agree that Democrats are likely to remain in control of the House of Representatives. In the upper chamber, the Senate, which is currently controlled by Republicans, Democrats would need to pick up three or four seats to gain a majority, depending on which party wins control of the vice presidency. People will also be voting for local and state officials. According to the website Ballotpedia, there are 99 state legislative chambers altogether in the 50 states. 86 of those chambers are holding legislative elections this year. Republicans hold 59 chambers to the Democrats' 39. While Democrats are unlikely to make up the difference, they are hoping to make gains at the state level, thereby reducing the margin of Republican-held chambers. On this final U.S. politics encounter before the November 3rd election, we'll talk with our veteran political analysts, John Fortier and Jim Kessler, about the state of the races and the impact of the final presidential debate, including several other factors that are likely to influence voter sentiment. According to VOA Newsroom reporter Ken Breedemeyer, quote, former Vice President Joe Biden holds an 8 to 10 percentage point lead over Trump in national polls, but a lead of about half that in battleground states that will likely decide the overall outcome, close quote. Analysts concur that the October 22 presidential debate between President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden was far more civil and informative than the first contentious debate, where crosstalk and interruptions hurt both candidates. Mr. Trump and Mr. Biden sparred over management of the coronavirus pandemic, health care, race relations, crime, North Korea, climate change, and leadership. In their closing statements, they responded to NBC moderator Kristen Welker's question, quote, in your inauguration address, what would you say to those who did not vote for you? Here is a soundbite from President Trump's reply.
Success is going to bring us together. We are on the road to success, but I'm cutting taxes, and he wants to raise everybody's taxes, and he wants to put new regulations on everything. He will kill it. If he gets in, you will have a depression, the likes of which you've never seen. Your 401ks will go to hell, and it'll be a very, very sad day for this country.
U.S. President Donald Trump speaking at the October 22nd presidential debate. Former Vice President Joe Biden had this to say.
I'm an American president. I represent all of you, whether you voted for me or against me. And I'm going to make sure that you're represented. I'm going to give you hope. We're going to move. We're going to choose science over fiction. We're going to choose hope over fear. We're going to choose to move forward because we have enormous opportunities to make things better.
Democratic nominee, former Vice President Joe Biden at the final presidential debate before November 3rd. For more on the debate and the state of the race just 10 days before final votes are cast, we turn to our regular analysts. On the Republican side, John Fortier is Director of Governmental Studies at the Bipartisan Policy Center, a prominent think tank here in Washington. And for a view from the Democrats, Jim Kessler. Jim Kessler is former aide to Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, currently Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way. That's a centrist policy group here in Washington. And both gentlemen join me via Microsoft Teams to remain socially distant as we navigate the coronavirus pandemic. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Carol.
Good to be here.
Now, here's a little warning for you. If any one of you speaks out of turn, I'm going to mute your mic.
Okay.
Those were the rules in the final debate. I don't think they used the mute button too much. But first to you, John Fortier, what's your takeaway from this final debate? Do you think it changed any minds, the trajectory of the race? There's not many persuadable voters left at this point.
Well, first of all, it was more watchable than the first debate, and that is a low bar to get over. Really, the first debate was hard to watch. both candidates talking over one another. I think probably more hurtful to Donald Trump, that debate. So this debate was a better debate. Certainly Donald Trump's performance was better. Many people judge the debate as both candidates did reasonably well. It is hard to move people at a later date. There are a lot of people locked in, and that's true. But, you know, again, it's one of the opportunities that the candidates have, one of the few that they're on stage together that people are watching. And, you know, I think for Donald Trump, who is behind in the polls, the hope is that he doesn't have to necessarily be judged as winning the debate. That would be great. But also that maybe he is bringing home more people who are going to vote Republican, maybe a little bit wavering on Trump himself. That would be helpful to him. The poll lead for Joe Biden is pretty significant. So I think Donald Trump is going to need a number of factors to overcome that. But again, compared to the first debate, it was a better debate.
John, a quick follow-up before I turn to Jim. How do you think Republicans feel right now about their chances, as we say, for down ballot congressional races for Senate and Congress? Do you think President Trump helped them in this debate? How do you see it?
Well, in general, I think many Republicans are worried about their down ballot chances. The number of House seats that perhaps earlier, a year ago, they were thinking they would gain, now a number they're going to probably lose. More especially the Senate, where losing a net of 3 or 4 seats would lose them the chamber. That seems like it's much more on the table. You know, I would add the enthusiasm, which is across the board, but more especially on the Democratic side, and especially seen in terms of some of the fundraising numbers of those candidates, which have been extraordinary. You know, those are all things to worry about as Republicans. Did this one debate change the dynamic of the race? I doubt it. But again, I do think it was a better performance. And some of what Donald Trump needs to do is to just solidify some of his voters who might still be wavering, who don't have that much of an opinion of Joe Biden. There are still some of those voters out there. But I do think that there's an atmosphere out there that is challenging for Republicans.
Speaking of solidifying voters, Jim Kessler, over to you. What was your reaction to the debate? And do you think that Democrat Joe Biden helped to solidify his lead in the polls and helped down ballot Democrats?
I think it was a good night for Joe Biden, because it really needed to be a bad night for Joe Biden for Donald Trump to really come back in this race. This was not a debate that is going to change anybody's minds. The first debate actually did have an impact. It was consequential. Donald Trump had really a dreadful performance. Biden had a little bit of a lead going into that debate. It really spread afterwards. A group of voters who might have still been undecided and on the fence looked at that and said, I don't know if I want 4 more years of this. And I think the cake is pretty much baked at this point. The undecided voters out there now aren't undecided on whether they're going to vote for Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. They're undecided about whether they're going to stay home or vote at all. They're the voters that are less engaged in the process. They probably didn't even watch the debate. You know, Biden had an edge. He was between 52% and 54% in all 3 did you watch the debate polls. Trump was between 35% and 43%. I think that's more reflective of the audience that watched it. If you were a Donald Trump fan beforehand, you probably thought he did pretty well. If you were a Joe Biden fan beforehand, you probably thought Joe Biden did pretty well.
Turning back to you, John Fortier, you mentioned the enthusiasm on the side of the Democrats, the money advantage that Joe Biden certainly has more in his coffers, and money does have influence. But since we were last at these microphones, President Trump had contracted the coronavirus, but he is now well, thank goodness. He has tested negative. But another thing that happened was that we have now a nominee for the Supreme Court that Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is pushing through. In fact, we will probably have a full Senate vote, I believe, on Monday for Amy Coney Barrett. She is a conservative. She would be replacing deceased Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a liberal icon. To what extent does this issue motivate Republicans? And could that be a factor to help Republicans if indeed she is confirmed? And it looks very likely that she would be, because she seems to have the votes among the Republicans.
Look, about 6 weeks ago, I said in this crazy campaign season, the only 2 things that could happen that would make it more intense would be one of the candidates getting coronavirus and a Supreme Court vacancy. And so we've had both. On the Supreme Court vacancy, certainly for Democrats, they don't like the nominee and are opposing her, but they also have been arguing about the process. And going back to the Supreme Court seat that was open at the end of the Obama administration, Scalia's seat, which they believe Republicans should not have held open. And ultimately, Republicans were able to replace that justice with a conservative justice. So there's some pent up anger, I think, on the Democratic side. So you could say there's some motivation. I do also think, though, generally, Republicans are motivated by Supreme Court nominations. And arguably, whether you're a pro-Trump Republican or you're wavering on Trump, Republicans are generally united by this sort of thing. And the last thing I will say is there was some buildup. It seemed like this was going to be the biggest event of the century. But one, there's so much else going on. And two, Amy Coney Barrett performed very well. I think people went into that nomination process thinking, well, you know, she's going to be very polarizing and Democrats are really going to paint her in a negative light. Her numbers have come out, you know, much more positive than I think anyone would have anticipated. That doesn't mean that Democrats still don't feel strongly about the issue. We will have to think about if there's a Joe Biden presidency questions like, will they expand the number on the Supreme Court or do other things to try to push the court given this nomination? But again, her numbers coming out of this have really been quite good. So I think it's probably a net plus for Republicans, but there's a lot else going on. And, you know, it's not clear that that is going to make the difference, but it, I think, turned out better for Republicans than I think many people would have thought.
Jim Kessler, I asked John if this Supreme Court nomination would energize Republicans, but I could also say conversely, it could also energize Democrats because they are furious, obviously, about what they perceive as a double standard regarding the lack of consideration of President Obama's nominee back when there were more than 10 months before the election. But now with the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a liberal, this particular nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, if confirmed, she will literally change the direction of the court 6-3 in a sense. So this is probably energizing the Democrats, but I'd like to get your view on that, you know, to the extent this also energizes them. But as John said, it's also a crucial question for Republicans and maybe some of those suburban Republican leaning or independent voters who don't particularly care for Trump might be prepared to vote for him given his success if he in fact gets her confirmed.
Well, Republicans are going to get their judge, but I think it's going to cost them at the polls. And normally judge fights benefit Republicans. Republican voters care more about the courts than Democratic voters do. I think, though, we're going to see an exception here. Number one is the hypocrisy of confirming this justice when they would not even have a hearing for Merrick Garland in 2016 under Obama has basically taken about 50 Republican United States senators and turned them into liars. So you're seeing some Republicans that frankly shouldn't have that tough of a race in their states up for re-election in the Senate. Lindsey Graham, Joni Ernst, even Steve Daines in Montana. Joni Ernst is from Iowa. Lindsey Graham is from South Carolina. These should be cakewalk races. All three of them are in trouble, and all three of them are answering the question why they went back on their word. So I think Democrats handled this well, and I agree with John. Amy Coney Barrett handled herself very well, too. But Democrats define this issue as, number one, hypocrisy, and number two, about the Affordable Care Act and health care. And those are both motivating issues.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, Director of Governmental Studies at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard, co-founder and Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way. And they're joining me via Microsoft Teams. We are taking a look at the state of the race for the White House, Congress, and state and local offices just 10 days before the November 3rd election, in which many people have already cast their ballots. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel, VOA, or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to a very loyal fan from the Democratic Republic of Congo, Antoine Kamwenyi. As always, if you want to hear your name and home country on the air, send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, let's take a look at some of these races, both congressional and Senate. Over to you, John Fortier. And maybe you could also comment on any of these state races and local. How important are they And do you think that, as I suggested in the intro, perhaps the Democrats are gunning for some successes in those areas? And if so, what impact would that have?
Yeah, of course, the presidency is the biggest prize. But I think down the line, you'd say the Senate, of course, is the next biggest. And those state legislative races and chambers are another tier of races that are potentially much more in play. And Democrats may make some significant gains. I guess I would look at it this way. You know, there's still some uncertainty in this election. If it really closes up, it would be a big change. But, you know, Donald Trump could eke out a win. Or if Joe Biden won more narrowly, I think you'd see either perhaps a Republican Senate or a very narrow Senate majority, 50-50 or 51. You know, in that scenario, I think you're going to see, with Biden in charge, with all control, but a narrow majority, certainly some changes, but the kind of big changes that some people are talking about will be much harder. Question of, will they get rid of the filibuster? Will they make their maybe small number of moderates take very tough votes on lots of things like packing the court and gun safety laws or the Green New Deal, lots of things. So I do think that middle scenario is a little tricky for Democrats, even if they have control of everything. Then I think there is the scenario where Democrats really do well. If Joe Biden really does well, 7, 8, 9 point win. And there you could see a number of other Senate seats coming around. You know, right now, I think the tipping point seats are probably in North Carolina and Iowa, with Joni Ernst and Tom Tillis. But there are seats beyond that that Democrats certainly can pick up the better that Joe Biden does. The bigger the majority in the Senate, the bigger the types of changes that Democrats really could enact, and it really could be a, you know, something of a Democratic mandate going forward. Carrying down to the states, they're certainly going to do well in some legislative seats and chambers, places like Minnesota and maybe Arizona, North Carolina. And, you know, if things really get serious, Democrats are talking about maybe winning one of the legislative chambers in Texas, where that would not only be important for changing the course of governance in Texas, but some of those seats and some of those chambers are important for the next round of redistricting, which occurs in the next couple of years. We have our census, we give new seats out to the states, and we draw new lines. Right now, Republicans still have control of some large key states like Texas, and that might be undermined. So I do think we've got a spectrum of results here that could be pretty good for Democrats, all the way up to very, very significantly good for Democrats, which would be some significant change.
So turning to you, Jim Kessler, you always talk about the battleground states, whether Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, or the southern ones in Arizona, North Carolina, and Florida. What would you predict and the significance of that for Democrats? And also, you could comment on the local state races. How are Democrats viewing them and their importance?
At this moment, I feel that Democrats would win. When I say Democrats, I mean Joe Biden will win all six of the swing states. He needs to win three. The northern ones, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, they're trending very well for him, Michigan and Wisconsin in particular. Pennsylvania is a little bit tighter. Arizona is looking very good. Florida is always a mess, but the polls look pretty good. North Carolina looks pretty good. The early vote right now favors Democrats strongly. That's not a surprise. But what is a surprise is that some of that early vote is people who have never voted before, or what are known as low propensity voters, meaning they rarely come out to vote. And based on their demographics, it looks like those are going fairly strongly for Biden in every one of these swing states. And that will trickle down to the other races on the ballot. It could make North Carolina flip from Republican to Democrat in the Senate race. Arizona, I think it's pretty certain that the Democrat is going to win that seat in the Senate race. Pennsylvania is another state where there could be a flip of state legislative races. In the past, Democrats have had to play catch up in the last 8 or 10 years. So we could see a realignment here.
Over to you, John Fortier. The demographics, analysts say they don't look too great for Mr. Trump. According to some statistics, Mr. Trump won, for example, blue-collar women, women without college degrees, by 19 points in 2016. He's only carrying them by about 7 points. He's also losing seniors, and we have to attribute this probably to his management of the coronavirus pandemic.
Now, that's sort of a tough something to overcome for Donald Trump, because, again, those were his strongest voters in terms of age. And again, losing that even probably at a higher rate than he's losing in other groups is something no one would have predicted and is certainly part of the reason he's behind in the polls.
Over to you, Jim Kessler. As I said, the demographics are important for both sides, but former Vice President Biden seems to be doing much better with seniors. And this is very important in Florida and Arizona, both battleground states, to what extent, you know, they could turn the tide for him there.
And with the demographics, also Pennsylvania is another senior dominated state. Donald Trump does have a demographic advantage, and that is he doesn't need to win the popular vote. Republicans have only won the popular vote once since 1992, but have won the presidency three times. So Joe Biden probably needs to win the popular vote by 3 points in order to win the presidency. But there are key constituencies that have moved over to Joe Biden, or at least closer. Senior citizens are certainly one of them. And you mentioned the states where it's so important there, Florida, Arizona, and also Pennsylvania. And Joe Biden is doing better with non-college educated white voters than Hillary Clinton was doing. Donald Trump is still winning, but not by the margins, you know, necessary to take the election. And if this election goes as I expect it's going to go, with pretty strong lead for Joe Biden, it'll be because he doesn't lose as badly among these white non-college educated voters. He cleans up in the suburbs, particularly among college educated women, and he turns out the African American base.
So back to you, John Fortier, as we close. President Trump does continue to disparage mail-in voting, but we've had more mail-in voting than ever as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. So are you worried at all with regard to November 3rd, the night of the election, with respect to tallying the votes? Will there be challenges unless it's a very clear result on that night? What worries you?
I mean, the first point is we're going to be voting dramatically in a different way, and we're seeing that already. We knew we were going to vote more by mail, and early voting also in person has had a great enthusiasm, and the numbers are just eye-popping as to what's happening at a very, very early stage in the election. I think there will be higher turnout overall as well. We don't absolutely know that number, but the early turnout is just staggering. So, you know, sometimes the big changes that we're making in states that didn't do a lot of voting by mail before or early voting, you know, may have some glitches. I think there are some possibilities for both new voters who have never voted by mail before making mistakes, and administrators for having some problems counting them. I think there'll be more pressure potentially on some of the states and the system for counting the vote, and it could take longer. I think there's a good chance we will know an election, but it depends on the margin. If the margin is not so close, yes, the fact that we'll take longer to get the actual tallies later, and some states may take a little longer, is an interesting point. Maybe it will affect some lower level races, but we could easily know the results of that presidential race.
Jim Kessler, you have the last word about whether or not we will know election results on election night, and if it's more murky, to what extent will challenges be made, particularly by Mr. Trump, since he is trailing former Vice President Joe Biden?
So I predict, like John, that on election night, we will know. At least the people who really follow elections closely will be able to see enough to say this is either a Joe Biden win or possibly that this is something that's going to go down to the wire. But I think we will know on election night. But there's something else that we just have to accept and figure out how to deal with. Whether Donald Trump loses narrowly or gets blown out, he is going to say that he was cheated out of the election. We can't pretend that he's not going to say that this wasn't a rigged system. He said in the debate that he was the best president for African Americans, including Abraham Lincoln. Like, this is how far he will go to distort the truth. And he's already laying the groundwork. The question will be, what will Republican leaders, Mitch McConnell, who leads the Senate, Kevin McCarthy, who leads Republicans in the House, the governors, members of the House and Senate who are Republicans, what will they be saying? And will they rise to the occasion and say to the American people and say to Donald Trump, he lost, the race is over, he needs to accept it, he needs to leave? In the past, you could count on that. But over the past 4 years, every time there was hope that Republican leaders would stand up for their country as opposed to kneel before President Trump, they've chosen to kneel. So I think that's going to be the test in November. And I really hope Republicans rise to the occasion should Joe Biden win. I have my doubts that they will.
On that dubious note, that's all the time we have on this politics edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, Director of Governmental Studies at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, thanks for a terrific conversation, your insights, and we will check in with you again after November 3rd. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.